Welcome to the Side Action Podcast, the sports gambling show that covers everything in the world of sports betting from A through Z. We'll cover the four major sports, as well as anything and everything in between worth some action, and we'll increase the size of your bankroll. And here we go.
Welcome to the Side Action, episode 20. We made it to 20. I'm Jim Weglars, a.k.a. Wegs. You can follow me at Wegspool on Twitter or Instagram.
And this is Steve Roberts, a.k.a. Action. You can follow me on Twitter at 31SRoberts.
You can follow us at Side Action Pod on Twitter. We are in Studio B in the far north side of Chicago today.
The Edgewater Studio.
You'll hear some ambulances and probably some sirens. It's a safe neighborhood, everybody.
Yeah, at Ridge Road right outside the window here. Is it Ridge Road or
Ridge Avenue?
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
exactly. So it's we're just trying to go a little bit mobile, which is exciting. So I'm glad Action made it happen tonight.
Yeah, we had a big Andersonville Chamber of Commerce meeting up here. So
nice.
I was in the neighborhood and we decided to utilize Studio B.
Studio B, here we are, right here. Speaking of Studio B, this is where we had a big game night on Saturday night. That was fun. Action came out victorious. Team Hearts took down Jimmy Weggs and his team. And I got to be honest with you, Steve, I hadn't lost the game night until that night. So I was a minus 300 favorite going in.
Well, Action, the underdog, stepped in along with my team of Heart compadres. And we dominated the trivia. Charades was phenomenal. And yeah, we came through as plus 200 underdogs.
That's right. Scotty Green, I was there when he was doing the Dick Cheney imitation, which was, I gotta be honest with you, was more of the Dick part than the Cheney. So you guys got that one. It was pretty awesome. How was the rest of your weekend?
It was great. I went over and saw the Indiana Pacers play the Bulls on Friday night at the United Center. Victor Oladipo put on quite a show, 36 points, and busted the game-winning three-pointer off the backboard from like 30 feet to break all Bulls fans' hearts.
Oh, that was an overtime, right?
Yeah, overtime game. It was phenomenal. Zach LaVine had some serious shots too at the end, which one of them could have tied it from the corner, but was beyond the buzzer.
That's awesome. I think the guy I coached with took his family to the game as well.
Oh, nice. So, how about your weekend?
I went on a date. It was fun. I went to Second City, which is the local comedy place, as you know, and saw the Lucas Brothers. I don't know if you know those guys. They're they're these two twin African-American dudes from Newark, New Jersey, and they have a whole shtick. It's really, really cool. They just the way that they interplay off of each other, they kind of have these inside jokes that they eventually fill you in on, and I don't know. It's good flow. I saw him in like 22 Jump Street and a couple other movies. So they were really good. It was a good time.
Cool. If they're in town for a while, I might check that out.
Absolutely. Obviously, we'll talk a little bit more about my Sunday, which was ruined.
Yeah, the rest of the weekend for Chicago fans probably didn't go so well. But I had a great Saturday before the game night, obviously. And then the game night just was the icing on the cake.
You got a little game gift card. But yeah, I didn't go. Did a pretty rough weekend bets. I ended up going 1-4. 0-4 going into last night, which we'll talk about. But, you know, sometimes you got to take it on the chin. You can't win every week.
Yeah, I gave some away on Friday night with the Pacers specifically, and they didn't cover. But Saturday had a really great day with the Colts and then the Dallas Cowboys closing it out at nighttime. And then Sunday was just off the charts. I crushed the books. Big on the Chargers, left, right, and center. And then I had the Eagles +7. So one turned out
pretty
well.
Look at this guy. His money. Let's see if we can flip his luck this week. Let's go over the pod in general. We have, it's not really a legislative update, just kind of an informational update, you know, kind of betting across America. And we'll go over our recap, which, you know, obviously Action did well. We'll go into the takeaways from Wildcard Weekend in the NFL, which a lot of good information here, as well as the College Football Championship, which was last night. Just an amazing game at the start anyway. We'll take a look at our NFL divisional matchups and how we're breaking that down and who we like. There's some key injuries to think about and also, of course, some massive amounts of information, especially on the Colts, apparently. And then we'll take a look at college hoops. We've got a few keynotes and some information and then some spots we're looking at there. There's actually quite a few good games that I'm targeting. And then finally, we will do the head-to-head, close it out. Sounds good, right?
Sounds like a great episode. Divisional weekend is one of my favorite of the year, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it should be some great games. All right, well, just this brief informational update. I heard today on VSiN that the Washington Wizards owner, who also owns the Washington Capitals, is actually going to be doing several alternate feed of the telecast for gambling purposes. So he's having like an interactive telecast with information on the lines, live betting in real time while you can watch the game, which this is something that we've talked about in early episodes of the podcast, that this is probably the future. This is something that you're going to see, maybe even have interactive touch screens on your keypads or on your laptops or iPads or something. So this is kind of the first owner to kind of get out there and do this. I understand he's a big VSiN fan. And as soon as he got on, this was big news on the channel.
Wow, that's really cool. So are these alternate telecasts going to be going on this season, or is this something that he's looking to implement for next season?
This season. He's actually done 4 or 5 dates. I think the first one's coming up. I guess I should have put that in the information. I didn't put that, but I know that they're talking about it today, so I think it's going to be happening in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, I actually saw on Twitter last night there was a similar telecast on VSiN for the national championship game. Several of the VSiN personalities were a live gambling telecast and talking about how the live odds were changing as the game went on. So
that's right.
The wave of the future.
It's here. It's here. And all that live betting, they talk about it sometimes on VSiN. Last night they talked a lot about it because there was a lot of live betting last night. So there's a lot of Broccoli Bobs out there trying to win some money. Well, let's go into the head-to-head. We obviously targeted a couple of these big games in Wildcard Weekend. And the first one I'm going to go over is definitely the Chargers against Baltimore. The Chargers were 3-point underdogs at Baltimore, the total being 42 that we saw. And in this game, I got to be honest with you, I thought it was going to go a little bit differently. I thought it was going to be a little bit closer game. Baltimore came back late, but the Chargers really implemented a unique strategy where they kind of removed their linebackers from the game, putting in safeties in their place to be a little more agile to fill the holes on that read option, and it worked to a T. Lamar Jackson looked horrible. He fumbled 3 times in the first 8 snaps or something. He didn't lose them all, but it looked rough, and they obviously took control of that game early. We're up 23-3 until finally Lamar Jackson put some points on the board. Everybody on Twitter, me included, were looking to see if Flacco was going to go in the game. But the total did end up going under that 42.
Yeah, from the opening kickoff when Lamar Jackson dropped the first ball and then the snap went over his head on the next snap, I knew that the Chargers were in for a big day. And obviously the Chargers. I was a little bit perturbed, though, at how the Chargers got a little bit conservative in the second half.
They did.
They stopped throwing the ball like they were early on and just basically let the Ravens back into the game. Mm-hmm. I thought for a minute there that the Ravens could actually pull that one out.
Yeah, there was a couple points in the second half that I just said, oh, the Ravens aren't going to lose this game because the defense just totally cranked it up. They forced a fumble. They actually should have had a pick of Rivers on the following series. Then they had that kind of play where Melvin Gordon was diving for the goal line, and they had to review it because it came out and was returned 100 yards the other way. That was a huge play. But they ended up kind of basically saying that he was down at the 1, and they scored on that play, the Chargers did, to go up 23-3. But you're right. They let him score. Crabtree had 2 touchdowns, and then they actually had the ball and a chance to win at the end of the game.
Yeah, until Jackson fumbled again.
Shocker. The other game for Wild Card Weekend that we went head-to-head on, of course, as we kind of noted, the Eagles were at the Bears. The Bears were 6-point favorites at home, total being 41. Yeah, I had it all wrong. No shocker here. The Bears were not really ready to play against that Eagles defense. The Eagles played really tough, especially when Foles turned the ball over twice early. I thought the Bears had a chance to kind of jump on him the way I thought that they would, and they were only held to field goals, which really kind of kept the Eagles in the game. And in the second half, Foles was able to kind of work on that tired defense, get a couple of touchdowns. But despite all that, the Bears had a chance to at least win the money line bet with Cody Parkey. And this guy sucks. Please get rid of this dude. I guess there was a fingertip on it, whatever. He double doinks the ball and they lose 16-15.
Yeah, I let out a very loud gasp as the ball hit the upright and then the crossbar. I thought it was going to roll in, actually, and when it came out the other way and landed in the end zone, I just couldn't believe it. It was an awesome game. The Eagles played great defensively, but, I mean, when you look at the box score, got to be said, I know this is no solace to you, but the Bears really dominated them.
They did.
They outplayed them, gaining 5.7 yards per play and 0 turnovers. And the Eagles had just 4.7 yards per play and turned it over twice. But like you mentioned, it came down to that red zone efficiency. Mm-hmm. The Bears got there a few times and couldn't score a touchdown. And then the Eagles punched it in twice in their only two trips. And ultimately, that decided the game.
The other thing I was noting, that the Eagles were susceptible to the big play, which they gave up two big plays in the game, but neither of them on that exact play resulted in touchdowns. You know, the one was to Robinson. That ended up being a field goal. And then they did end up scoring a touchdown on the other one where I think it was Bellamy caught that ball. But he it's like he tripped over air.
Yeah.
And he should have had a 70-yard touchdown. Instead, he trips over the air. They burned some clock. And we talked about it via text. I wasn't really a fan of them going for two, running that crazy play with Khalil Mack. I understand the numbers, but with 9 minutes to go, it doesn't make sense. And in the end, didn't really help him out. So.
Yeah, it cost him in the end.
There's another win for action. Then finally, on Sunday, Indiana was playing at Michigan. This is in college basketball. Michigan were 9-point favorites at home, total being 133. Finally, I got a win here. Michigan, they came out early. They came out running and gunning, and they got all over Indiana. Indiana really never got within between like 7 points. I think it was the closest they got all game. So it really was one of those situations where Michigan just had it all the way. Maybe Indiana wanted to watch some pro football.
Yeah, they wanted to get out of there early. Michigan just jumped on them early. In the first TV timeout, I think both Juwan Morgan and Romeo Langford had two personal fouls and were saddled to the bench. I was logging in frantically trying to live bet Michigan in the first half. But that Michigan defense was stout, and the crowd was just too much for Indiana to overcome. They were losing 44-29 at halftime.
Right.
And actually, I will say, very respectable in the second half, actually won the second half.
Right.
But still lost the game 74-63, and Michigan got their 9-point cover. One thing that I took away from that game, though, is how notoriously slow starting these Indiana Hoosiers are. This is the second game in a row where they failed to cover the first half. They lost to Illinois in the first half in their last home game. And I'm going to be taking that nugget to the window here in the next few and seeing if I can get Indiana napping again in the first half games to come.
Might as well. They're not coming out of the gates fast. The last game we can talk a little bit here and a little bit later was Clemson against Alabama. We were targeting the total here, the total being 59.5. Wow. That was a good call. It was really close.
Nail biter.
The final score was 44-16. Actually, it went over in the third quarter, I believe. But it was funny that it fell right on 60. Action wins this one again. If you watch the game, it was fast and furious in that first quarter. It was kind of incredible football. But in the end, Clemson just kind of took him to the woodshed.
Yeah, it was remarkable. I think you and I both had money on Clemson and the money line, which we talked about last week.
That's right.
As well as the Clemson spread. And I really thought they had a decent chance to win this game. But in no picture in my mind did I see Clemson dominating in that fashion.
Right.
It was just unbelievable. That defensive line was getting after Tua. They could not run the ball for anything. And Tua was just having trouble completing some passes. And I think that even Nick Saban knew they were in trouble the moment he went for that fake field goal.
Yeah, he went for 4th-and-1 at his own 35, too. The guy was scared kind of playing, which you never see Saban do that. So we'll talk a little more about that. But you have a note here that Trevor Lawrence became the first, what, freshman quarterback to win a national title since 85?
Yep. Jamel Holloway for Oklahoma in 1985 was the last freshman to win it.
That's pretty incredible. Let's talk about the NFL wildcard weekend. Obviously, the side action picks, if you followed me, you didn't do well. If you followed action, you did quite well.
Yeah, we had a great weekend with both the Colts money line and the Colts ATS winner. We did have the over in that Colts game, which did not come through, unfortunately. But then we followed that up with a big-time Chargers winner on Sunday.
Yeah, that was big. So in these games, you've noted that the NFL playoffs have basically had 14-1, the underdogs have won 14-1 against the spread in the last 15 games. That is just incredible.
Absolutely incredible. We were talking before the podcast about how the Eagles ran through the playoffs last year as underdogs in every single game. We had the Jaguars cover in several games.
Yep.
And the Saints covered against the Vikings.
Right.
But I think this is a trend that would be nice to follow. But as you've talked about in episodes past, these trends tend to go back to their middle. So it may be interesting to see if some of these favorites can come through starting this weekend.
You wonder if the books adjust it. I mean, that's the biggest thing. I think that when you got to think, like I always, before this year, I always look at straight up picks. You know, I'm looking at who's going to win the game. I'm trying to win pools. I'm not necessarily trying to win spread pools. So in my case, I'm just seeing who's trying to win. And if this is true, this kind of trend, I'm sure that the books are going to adjust those spreads a little bit. So maybe the favorites can come in. Mm-hmm. Let's go a little bit more into your Colts. They had a great win against the Texans. In fact, they should have beat them worse. I mean, it was 21-0 after what? It was in the second quarter?
Yeah, 21-0, and they just held on. And, you know, I think the difference was that they just started running the ball down their throats. They didn't really have any interest in getting margin.
Right. And I think that's something that may loom large this week because Marlon Mack had that big game, 148 yards. They're probably going to try to do that against the Chiefs this week, who are terrible against the run. But I think the other thing, as you've been talking about a lot of people, we also have a listener, Sean Conroy, is like that Colts defense is just way better than they've been. Mm-hmm. And they played great against Deshaun Watson. He didn't look that great. They sacked him 3 times. And I don't know. They were just making it happen.
Yeah, like you mentioned, the biggest thing that I took away from this game was the Houston Texans owned the best run defense in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And that was before Marlon Mack got there. The Colts ran for 200 yards. 148 by Marlon Mack, which was a franchise playoff record. Mm-hmm. And each one of his carries in the last three quarters gained over a yard. That was 66 more yards than anyone had against the Texans in the regular season. And Football Outsiders ran an analysis and noted that Mack's performance was the third best playoff performance by a running back since 1995.
Wow.
In terms of defense adjusted yards above replacement. And I just wonder how this Kansas City run unit is going to stop them. They are the worst run defense in the NFL.
Terrible.
So that's something that I'm going to be looking forward to this weekend, and I'm sure we'll be talking about it later.
Absolutely. The other big game, as you noted, Cowboys were playing against Seattle. I got to be honest with you, I was on Seattle both straight up and with the spread. The rule I have here is get the best number because I did see 2.5 when it first came out, and I did not pull the trigger. But of course, dumb me, I was confident in the side and took it at +1 only. And of course, when we were actually, it was during game night, everybody was huddled around the TV when I was trying to get us to finish game night, watching that game, and they, you know, basically lose 24-22. A lot of people obviously lost the bet at 2.5 or 1 if it was on the Cowboys side. So yeah, it was rough, man. It was a rough game. Zeke Elliott dominated them in the first half. He had 91 yards rushing. And went for over 120, 130 yards. So Russell Wilson didn't do much until the end. They really didn't open up that offense. He did hit some plays later. And the other key factor in this game was Sebastian Janikowski got hurt on that long field goal attempt. And they just weren't, they refused to kick the ball.
Yeah, that was remarkable. He pulled that hammy at the end of the first half. And they just went for two the rest of the game. And I was reading throughout gambling Twitterverse that a lot of people looked at that as kind of a bad beat because Seattle ended up punching in 2 2-point conversions, which got the margin to 2 and ultimately covered that 2.5-point spread. As you talked about, bounced around all week. It opened at 2.5. The sharp money looked to be on Seattle, went down to 1. Mm-hmm. And then by kickoff, it was actually back to Dallas -2.5. So interesting moves there.
The other thing was the kicker. I guess they'd have no – I guess the backup punter or somebody can't just do an onside kick. They did some sort of drop kick or something at the last
bizarre
play.
I think what the intent was there is to pop the ball way up in the air. Mm-hmm. And at that point, it's a live ball. So it's basically like a jump ball in the NBA. But I don't think that – what's his name – executed.
Yeah, it was a rough one. Rough one. All right, well, let's talk a little bit more about the national championship game last night. We were both texting and we were tweeting and stuff last night. Clemson came out, started the game off with a pick six. That kind of boded well immediately for everybody who was on Clemson, like myself. And then, but, you know, Tua answered with a big touchdown. It was kind of back and forth at the start. And then I'm not sure exactly what switched the game. I know when I was watching it, I thought, oh, this is going to be the best game we ever saw. Then all of a sudden, it seemed to me that there was something physical that happened. ATN, who's the running back for Clemson, that dude is powerful.
Yeah, he flipped a switch.
And he just started running through tacklers, and then Lawrence just hit those guys deep. And those wide receivers for Lawrence were just winning every single play.
Yeah, it was incredible to watch. A couple of heartbreakers that I had, though, I wanted to mention was Alabama in the first quarter. -0.5 a point. They were down 14-13 and driving. And they got into the red zone with like 3.5 minutes left. And I'm sitting around live bet, just looking for an opportunity to hedge. And I saw Clemson get up to as high as plus 250 mm-hmm. on the first quarter line. And I was so ready to pull the trigger. But then Alabama ran it inside the five,
yeah.
a minute and a half left.
Yep.
They ran three plays inside the five under a minute and a half. And they couldn't get it in. The quarter went to zero, and I lost the bet. And then they kicked the field goal like two plays later.
That's awful. That's a bad beat for sure. Yeah. Yeah, the other thing was, as the game went on, you could just see that the defense for Clemson just dominated Alabama. And especially Tua just seemed a little bit confused at times. Mm-hmm. And then later, like you had noted, that they stopped their running game. In the first half, I thought they ran okay. Second half, they couldn't do a damn thing. The other thing was, Bama opened the second half with this like very long sustained drive and then basically don't come up with points. So
yep.
it was a rough one. But I tell you, the true freshman of Lawrence and that other kid,
Justin Ross unreal performance.
Also from Alabama, as we talked about last week. Those guys are true freshmen. They have to play two more years in college. That's amazing. These guys are going to be incredible next year, too.
Thank you, Kirk Herbstreit. I think he must have said that 100 times last night.
Did he? Anyway, so yeah, it was a great game. And for me, they've already put up the futures, of course, and see if Bama and Clemson are going to face each other again next year. They kept putting up the stat that both teams, this senior class, have won 55 games and four championships and yada, yada. But there are other teams out there, so I'd probably still take the field if I had the chance on that one.
Yeah, Clemson's damn good, and they are certainly capable of being back there next year, especially in that ACC conference.
That's right. All right, let's transition back into the NFL. We're going back and forth here. We're going to dig a little deeper into these divisional matchups. As Action says, these are the greatest games to me. They're really fun and competitive. However, we've got a bit of information that we'll go over later. Let's review. You have you wanted to check out what our championship picks and Super Bowl picks were from the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I meant to do this last week, but we didn't get around to it. I went back and listened to episode 3 of the Side Action podcast.
There you go.
And it was our NFL preseason preview, mm-hmm. and we actually did a really good job.
We did.
Congratulations, Wex.
Pat myself on the back.
We nailed several of the divisions, and mm-hmm. we also made conference championships and Super Bowl picks, and I'll let you jump in with yours to start.
Yeah, I wish mine looked as good as yours, but I had the Rams over the Falcons. I know originally I might have said the Saints on that episode. I'm mm-hmm. not sure, but I know when I look back in my actual notes, I meant the Falcons, so I had the Falcons going in there. And then I had the Jags over the Patriots, and I was a big Jags fan early in the season, and I have the Rams winning the Super Bowl, so obviously, two of those teams kind of fell in some hard times, but, you know, the Rams and Patriots are still in the mix, and the Rams certainly could definitely make the Super Bowl and win it.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't go quite as deep as you did, but I did have the LA Chargers winning the AFC, and the New Orleans Saints as your NFC champions, and the New Orleans Saints winning the Super Bowl.
So you definitely have a chance. I mean, those are viable options, all three sides there, so big game for, I think, the Chargers this weekend for sure.
Yep.
But, I mean, the Saints obviously are the odds-on favorite right now, which you've been on from the beginning of the year. Okay, well, when I was looking at my updated playoff index, which, by the way, failed kind of miserably. I was 1-3, as you can imagine, from the index. I look at the remaining teams. I still have the Patriots and the Rams at the top. Saints and Chiefs are tied. Then the Colts, Chargers, Cowboys, and Eagles. So we'll see how that plays out on the field. As I mentioned last week, using this index has been really good for me the last few years in pools and such. But this year is so compressed. It really shows that, like I said last week, it blew up in my face because the teams are really so close. And I don't know what else to say. But some information I pulled from the divisional round is since 2009, home teams are 26-10 in that span. So you may say, well, that's not too. That's actually a lot.
Yeah.
There was one year when two road teams won, and that doesn't happen. You know, it only happened in 2010, and that was the Jets and Packers. And then a couple of other interesting things. You could have the possibility where you have the two lower seeds win in both of these games and both conferences. So the last time the 4 and 6 seeds would have won was 2008. And that would be the Cowboys and Eagles this year if that happened. Mm-hmm. And that was Arizona and Philly that year. And then the last time the 5 and 6 seeds have won in this, in our case, the Colts and the Chargers, we both like those teams, that's never happened since they switched to a 6-team format in either conference.
So never like in 0%?
0%. 0.0. So if it happens, which it could, that'll be the first time ever.
Oh, well, I'll be betting on that, maybe.
So what notable injuries you got out there, Action, for this weekend?
Well, Melvin Gordon left the game early on with another MCL, it looked like, as I read from Pro Football Doc. I think it was his opposite leg this time. Yeah, the other leg. Yeah. But remarkably returned in the second half, or even the second quarter, and ran pretty well.
He looked pretty good, yeah.
I expect that he'll be back out there again this week, along with Austin Eckler.
Mm-hmm.
And Chargers tight end Hunter Henry was reportedly at practice this week, and it looks like he may suit up and play on Sunday under a snap count, which would be a huge boost to the Chargers.
Yeah, they could use him for sure against the Patriots. You've noted some Colts injuries. You know, this defense has been playing really well, but it looks like Malik Hooker and Mike Mitchell have some are a little dinged up.
Yeah, both of these guys left the game with injury on Saturday, although Hooker did return to the game. But I read today on Twitter that he was spotted walking around the facility in a walking boot. So
never a good look.
Mentioned that it was just precautionary, similar to Tua, maybe. But the Colts definitely need these guys on the field if they're going to defend that potent Chiefs passing attack.
That's right. You also put Eric Berry for the Chiefs. He's got a heel injury, which, of course, basically he's been out most of the year with that kind of injury. So we'll note that. And it looks like Watkins is going to return to the lineup. That's actually a good boost for them.
Yeah, Sammy Watkins looks like he's going to come back. And I expect that Eric Berry is going to play too. He had some snaps in week 17. So I expect he'll be out there to face against that Colts offense.
Yeah, they're going to need him. Okay, so what spots do you like this week, Action, in the divisional round?
Well, we can go in order again, and I think we may be talking about this, and you and I both are in agreement, I think, with the Colts here and the divisional spot in Kansas City. Right now, they're listed as 5-point underdogs at the Chiefs, and the total in this game has ballooned to a high 57.
You said you got it at 53, though, huh?
Yeah, right on open Sunday, I was looking for these numbers, and I saw 53.5 come out, and I just hammered the over in this game.
It's a smart move. Personally, at 57, I probably would be going under. That's a bigger number. I think these defenses, well, the Colts defense is pretty good, and we'll see. I don't know if it's going to be a real shootout. For me, some of the things I've noted that they noted actually on VSiN this week, in the wild card round, the first time quarterbacks went 0-3. Mm-hmm. You know, you had Trubisky and Watson and
Lamar Jackson,
mm-hmm. right? So when you hit that big stage, it's a lot tougher. I mean, the defenses are going to play a little bit better. They're going to definitely examine your tendencies. Mahomes, in this case, would be the new guy. I think that works against him. Luck has obviously performed really well on the road throughout his career. I do think, as we noted, Marlon Mack is going to run all over this Chiefs defense. So it's really a matter of can the Colts slow down the Chiefs, and I actually think they will, and I actually believe they're going to win straight up in this game.
Wow. Money line pick here from Wegs.
I might do a little sprinkle like you always talk about.
Oh, yeah, sprinkle a little bit there. I picked out a few trends here that I want to mention right off the bat. The first is the Chiefs, this version of the Chiefs this year, are now 1-6 against the spread in their last seven games, with the only cover coming in week 17 against the Raiders.
Right.
So they're on a pretty downtrend right now in terms of expectations against the spread, which ultimately is what spreads are, is expectations amongst bettors.
Sure.
Now, going back since 1970, the Chiefs are 4-16 straight up and 3-17 ATS in the playoffs, including a 0% 0-9 against the spread at home. And these Colts and Chiefs in their franchise history have faced off four times previously in the playoffs. And Indianapolis is a balmy 4-0 straight up and against the spread, with two of those four losses coming at Arrowhead Stadium.
Well, as we noted, I don't think the Chiefs have won a home playoff game since 1993. We were speculating that could have been with Joe Montana under center.
Yeah, and I'll tell you all this because I don't think trends really matter. Now, it's really fun for a lot of casual sports fans to talk about them, but when it comes down to it, that's not why I like the Colts at all.
Mm-hmm.
I dove into the numbers on this game, and we hinted on this earlier. Kansas City ranks dead last in rush defense, DVOA, giving up 5 yards per opponent's rush attempt.
Right.
Now, I can do the math there, and I can tell you that two of those plays equals a first down. So I expect that they're going to have some serious success. This nasty Indianapolis O-line is ranked fourth in DVOA adjusted offensive line yards, averaging 4.8 yards per carry. And it's a complete mismatch.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Indianapolis is going to be able to control the clock and keep Patrick Mahomes and that potent Chiefs offense off the field. It's going to be their game plan, I think, to limit his opportunities. And if the Indianapolis Colts get more time of possession in this game, I think they have a really good chance to win it. And I love the +5, and I'm right there with you taking the Colts on the money line. Already betted at +195.
That a boy.
And I'm looking to add them into teasers too. If I can find a 5.5 and buy that up to 10.5 or 11, I'm definitely going to be doing that too. I'm getting as much money down as possible on the Colts.
All right. There's a couple of things that are not as much metrically based here that I think play into this too. I think that since Kareem Hunt has been out of this lineup, mm-hmm. from this team, they have not been the same. Now, maybe that also factors in Watkins because he was hurt, but I think that Hunt definitely is a difference maker in this offense. The other thing to me is just, look, we know that Patrick Mahomes is probably going to win the MVP, and if he doesn't, he'll finish second this year. The guy's great. I love him. I wish the Bears had drafted him. But I think if you were to say that you usually pick the better quarterback if it's a close matchup, Andrew Luck's a better quarterback than Patrick Mahomes right now.
Wow, that's crazy to say, isn't it?
It is, but it's true. And so I think when you look at all those matchups last weekend, and whenever you're looking at teams head-to-head in a tough matchup, you got to go the edge to the better quarterback. And in this case, that's Luck. So I'm on it for that reason, too. So it's more of a narrative explanation, but I'm mm-hmm. on it for you.
Yeah, on the other side of the ball, I should mention, though, that this Kansas City offense is prolific, mm-hmm. without a doubt. I mean, we can't pass that up. They have the number one passing offense, and this Colts defense is ranked 20th defending the pass.
Right.
One area where I think that the Chiefs may be able to have some success is throwing the ball to Kelce. The Indianapolis Colts are ranked 29th in defending tight ends, and I think that Matt Eberflus is going to have to pay him and Tyreek Hill especially attention to right. make sure that they shut down those two playmakers. It may be a big Sammy Watkins and Damian Williams game.
Right. The other factor is obviously Hill could play in the special teams game. So true. You got to prevent those big plays to get that Kansas City crowd out of the game early. If they make those big plays, that's when they just get rocking in there. So
yeah, but I mean, you got to give the special team edge to the Colts with Adam Vinatieri, the most.
Oh, he's a great kicker, sure.
The most crunch time kicker in the history of the league.
He's the man. Well, we'll save the next game we have here, the Chargers, New England, for the head-to-head. Mm-hmm. Let's jump on down to the other couple games. We've got Dallas is 7-point underdogs at the Rams. You know, we're not really going in huge detail here. We're just going to speak generally. I actually do like the Rams in this game. I think that the 7 points is a big number. And obviously, the key matchup here is, can the Rams stop Ezekiel Elliott? He had a great game last week against Seattle. The Rams are pretty bad against the run as well. So it really is a sweetheart matchup for Dallas. Plus, I heard a lot of information again on VSEN about when Dallas played there in the preseason a couple years ago, the crowd was like 75% Dallas fans in there. Mm-hmm. So it could be more of a home game or neutral site field game than normal for the Rams. But for me, I think the Rams got a week to rest. Gurley's going to feel better. Goff's going to be way more comfortable at home. And I'm sure McVay's going to have some ideas for this tough Dallas defense. What do you say?
Yeah, I'm really struggling with this game. I don't have any side whatsoever. I'm probably going to be staying away from it altogether. But I agree with you. Gun to head, if I had to choose a side at this one, I would probably go with the Rams. They're going to be coming back a little bit more healthy. Todd Gurley is now going to have 3+ weeks mm-hmm. of rest. So he should be ready to rock and roll. And Goff at home is a much better quarterback. He is an LA kid, and I think he's comfortable in that climate and tends to perform quite a bit better there in LA. Although the crowd does concern me a little bit. I think that's a really good point that mm-hmm. Dallas travels well, and obviously we know that LA is not quite a football town yet. So
right.
I imagine there will be tons of Cowboys fans there.
Mm-hmm. The other game is Philadelphia going to New Orleans. New Orleans is a 9-point favorite at home. Obviously, they destroyed the Eagles a few weeks ago when Wentz was still in the lineup. That's why that number is so big. I'm not sure I would jump on that 9 points. That's just such a big number for the playoffs. But I can't see New Orleans losing this game. I know the Eagles did what they did against the Bears last week. But as you noted, the Bears kind of dominated the statistics. Mm-hmm. New Orleans is better than the Bears. Their defense is playing really well. I know you love St. Nick and Foles. He's falling all over the place. But I don't know. I just can't see going with the Eagles and the Super Bowl champs in this one.
Yeah, this is another stay away for me. Really tough game to call. And actually, as I'm pulling up the odds now, it looks like New Orleans is down to an 8-point favorite across the books that I've got here. The total is 50.5.
Mm-hmm.
I think there may be a little bit of value there looking to go under that number.
Right.
Lately, this New Orleans team has been playing more of a grinded out type of style game. And I think that Philadelphia would love to keep this low scoring as well. So if they have any chance, they're going to have to slow the game down and make New Orleans play their kind of gritty, hard-nosed football game. I would probably lean towards Philadelphia over the touchdown, but again, not going to be playing it. I could definitely see New Orleans with that prolific passing attack taking advantage of the Philadelphia Eagles secondary, which Chicago failed to do, and probably attacking on a late touchdown and being able to cover this number. So although 8-9 looks like a big number, I probably would not be taking those points.
Right. The other thing we didn't talk about, the wild card weekend, 3 of the 4 games went under.
Yep.
You know, for a season that everything was going over, the playoffs actually had a little bit of defense. So that's something that you look at in the angles. That 50.5 does seem like a big number.
Yeah, but you also have to consider that the 4 teams sitting out are probably 4 of the best offenses.
Yeah.
Kansas City, New England, New Orleans, and LA Rams. So I think that there may be a little bit of a different narrative this weekend. Agreed, though. 50 seems like a little bit too many points in this game, particularly.
Okay. All right, we'll revisit a little bit of these games in the head-to-head. Let's transition to college basketball this week. You've noted that Michigan, Virginia, and Houston are the only undefeated teams remaining in the land because Nevada went down to New Mexico. What happened in that game?
They went down in flames.
Yeah, they did.
They were 14-point favorites on the road in New Mexico, and they lost by 18.
Yeah, they got crushed.
A 32-point difference against the spread, which was remarkable based on how well they've been playing this year. And I think that is really going to come back to bite them around the tournament time when seeding comes out. Their league just doesn't have very many opportunities for big wins, and they're going to get hurt on the seeding line.
The other thing, before that game, I heard a lot of information about how bad Nevada is shooting the 3-ball. And that kind of came to fruition in this game. New Mexico kind of got hot, and basically Nevada couldn't come back by shooting the 3. So it's one of these things to look ahead as the season goes on. We do still like this team, but they're basically, they got to come back in a different method than a lot of other teams. They're not going to shoot out of the gym. They're going to have to play a little bit better defense and start a, you know, run and gun and laying the ball in and dunking it versus shooting the 3. So what else you got out there from last week?
A couple of points. Michigan State looked really good and reversing a first half deficit and winning at Ohio State and Columbus. Mm-hmm. Very impressive performance. Alabama beat Kentucky at home.
Yeah, that was huge.
Big win. And the first time Kentucky has lost their SEC opener in quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
Virginia looked very strong in dismantling Florida State at home, and Kansas lost on the road at Iowa State, and Sunday afternoon got an even bigger loss with the news that their big man Udoka Azubuike is going to be out with a hand injury.
We were talking about this a little bit last week because we like Kansas in that game, but because of Azubuike and with him out of the lineup, I think their national title hopes may be in serious jeopardy. I mean, they were the number one team preseason. I don't think that's going to be the case going forward. We'll see how they do. The Big 12 is really competitive. And, I mean, Iowa State destroyed them.
Yeah, it wasn't even close. I had bet Kansas like we talked about last week. And I found out on Saturday morning that Azubuike was going to be out. And I kind of threw that ticket, proverbial ticket, out the window.
Crumple it up. Hook shot. Well, we'll see. So what do you got for some other ratings and strength of schedule stuff that you have here as a note?
One article I noted today on the Action app, which talked about the NCAA's net ratings and how they may be impacting some of these spreads and how coaches are handling late game situations.
Okay.
Because the selection committee has thrown out the old outdated RPI.
Okay.
And they're using this new NET, NET, which factors in game result, strength of schedule, the location, the scoring margin, final margin, up to a max value of 10 points.
Okay.
And they're also looking at net offensive and defensive efficiency.
Hmm.
So KenPom finally broke through into mainstream.
That's great.
And they're also taking a look at the quality of wins and losses. So this is going to have an effect, and already has, in the numbers on how coaches are approaching games and late game situations. And many of them are electing to keep their starters in the game until later on so that they can increase that margin and make sure they get to that 10-point margin.
Interesting.
They actually called out some numbers, and so far this season, all teams favored by 8 to 10 points are a sizzling 59.1% against the spread. And last season, over the season-long numbers, those same favorites, 8 to 10, were only 50% against the spread. So, right, 10%. I mean, kind of a short sample size, granted, but it's something that I'm going to be looking forward to, especially when you have solid teams playing at home, 8 to 10 point spreads, something they'll be looking to increase that margin.
Interesting. So basically, they're they're kind of gaming the system. And I understand why they picked 10 points, because a double-digit victory for the committee, but it's really interesting how the metric itself is almost guiding the coaching method, which in turn is influencing the betting. That's really that's kind of fascinating.
It is super fascinating. And you can't blame these coaches either. Their cash cow is getting to the NCAA tournament.
Right, of course.
So that is the end goal for every single basketball program in the NCAA.
Well, with that said, I always look at the KenPom each week. I'll do it again this week. But I noticed a lot of things in there. Some of them are pretty consistent, but you do see certain teams getting a better look sometimes in the AP now than it maybe used to be. Early on, you know, it's going to work itself out, but I still have some overrated teams, as you can imagine. One of the teams is TCU. I do like that team in general, but they are a little bit overrated according to KenPom, as well as your Indiana Hoosiers, which you've already noted you're betting against them. Mm-hmm. Buffalo somehow is still in the top 25. I'm not dogging you, Bulls. I mean, you guys are the class of the MAC, but probably don't deserve to be up there. Houston is undefeated. I understand they're in the top 25, but not in KenPom, as well as Marquette. And then St. John's, who we both have a bet on tonight. We have to see what happened, actually. It came down to the wire.
They covered.
Yay! Winner, winner. St. John's is now 15-1. I'm really excited with the resurgence with Chris Mullen there. But they still shouldn't. Maybe we'll see after this game that their metrics improved to that point. The underrated teams are Wisconsin, Nebraska, although I'm telling you, I keep losing with that team. Purdue, I know I keep pumping up Purdue every week. I want them to do better. Florida, who I really like, and we'll see, I have a big game this week. Texas, that's one of my darling teams right now. Shaka Smart and his team are really playing well. And Villanova, which is funny because I bet against them with the St. John's there, as the underrated teams. So how does that match up with your action index for the power top 10?
Well, I agree with most of these points. Doesn't seem like you have any faith in Kelvin Sampson and Houston. Neither do I. In fact, I picked out a couple spots on their schedule in the next week or so where I think they'll drop that first game.
Mm-hmm.
Not much has changed in my index. Duke still number one, UNC two, Michigan State's three, Gonzaga, Virginia, 4 and 5.
Mm-hmm.
Michigan still sits in there at number six, followed by Tennessee, which did jump up quite a bit this week.
Right.
And the 8 through 10 are North Carolina State, Virginia Tech, and Texas Tech. So a lot of the similar teams that we've been seeing, I think that it may stick around that way unless some of these teams really fall off.
Well, we'll see. As we noted on the pod last week, North Carolina and North Carolina State are playing right now.
Mm-hmm.
So probably at the end of the pod, we'll see what happens there. You've noted that Kansas is out of your top 10, even though they're an AP top 7. That's important. And then Nevada obviously has fallen out for you as well. And kind of obviously that big loss doesn't help their metrics.
Yeah. One thing that I was kind of looking for, and I'm not sure this is offered in any book, is the conference championship odds for Kansas. As you know, they've won 12 in a row. Mm-hmm. And without the big man in the middle, I think that their streak is in serious jeopardy this year. I don't think that books usually offer those odds. I've seen a lot of them have posted conference tournament championship odds, which is a totally different proposition.
Yeah, right.
I'll be looking out for that if I can find one.
Yeah, there might be a couple of casinos in Vegas that do that, but we'll see. Okay, so this week we like a few matchups. We already know to the St. John's, which is already in the books, but we wanted to talk about them. One of them is, it's funny because they're overrated, but I'm going against Kansas here. TCU is playing at Kansas in Lawrence tomorrow on Wednesday. And for me, it's 7 points on the road against a team without Azubuike. They just got destroyed by Iowa State. I like TCU in this game.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. We talked about it last week. Azubuike is so important to this team. And it showed in games against Villanova and New Mexico State earlier in December. Without Azubuike, they're a different team, and they just can't rebound that well. It looks like that TCU plays some really strong defense. They're 38th ranked in adjusted D, mm-hmm. and they are very good defending the three-point line as well with the 11th ranked three-point defense. So I like TCU to keep this game close, and I'm looking for a number now. If it's 7, I'm right there with you.
Okay. Another one for tomorrow. Looks like the Big 12 plays on Wednesdays. West Virginia, they're going to Kansas State. Kansas State, as we talked about last week, they have an incredible defense, but their offense is abysmal. And West Virginia, we're kind of speculating, will get about 5 points done this road game. I like Bob Huggins as a coach. I think he's just a great coach, and his team gets better every year as the season goes on. Metrically, they're not that great right now. However, I just can't see Kansas State keeping up because the 201st ranked offense in the country. Mm-hmm. So we have to check out the spread officially, but it's 4. Okay, mm-hmm. it's 4. Maybe a little tighter, but I still think I would stick with that with West Virginia.
Yeah, Bob Huggins certainly is a great coach, and year in and year out, this team plays great defense. They're always good at turning their opponents over, and they are again this year with 18.6% defensive turnover percentage. Now, Kansas State is obviously very bad on offense, but mm-hmm. they do have a pretty great D, number 5 in adjusted D. So I think this one's going to be tight and very low scoring. It looks like the total is only 129 points. So there's certainly some value with the underdog there, although I probably won't be there with you. 4 points seems a little short to me.
Yeah, maybe it's a little
probably
short.
A stay away.
Okay. A couple other games that we look that are coming up on Saturday. Texas is going against Texas Tech. This one is going to be in Texas. Yeah, I really like this team. I think they're one of those kind of teams that, especially with Kansas being maybe dethroned in the conference, they have kind of a dark horse shot against teams like Texas Tech. We're speculating the number. They're going to be a 2-point underdog at home, which I like that. And it'll be one of those great battles in Big 12. To me, Texas is always good at defending, but they've actually been scoring at a better clip than past years. So that's why I like Texas in this game.
Yeah, I think this is a great spot for the Texas Longhorns as well. And if they open up anywhere near an underdog, 1 to 2 points, I think that they're a great bet. They play almost equally good defense as the Texas mm-hmm. Tech Red Raiders. They're 10th in adjusted D.
That's right.
And 31st in adjusted defensive field goal percentage. Mm-hmm. So they can hang with Texas Tech on that defensive end. And in fact, they have better offensive numbers than Texas Tech too. So I like this bet a lot, and I'll be on the Longhorns with you.
Hey, all right. I found one. Hopefully I can win one. The last one we'll talk about is Florida. Florida is playing against Tennessee. They are hosting Tennessee. We are speculating that they will probably be an underdog as well, another 2-point underdog at home. Florida has been very underrated. They had some losses early, but metrically, this team is really good. They're 9th in defense. Obviously, Tennessee is very good as well with 5th. But I just like this, the way that they're going at it, and I think Florida is going to have something for the Vols when they come down to Gainesville.
Yeah, I don't think you can go wrong with these home short underdogs. Tennessee is obviously one of the top 5 teams in the nation, mm-hmm. and they do have an amazing offense, 5th ranked against that Florida D, which is 9th ranked. Should be a great matchup. Probably a stay away for me, though.
Okay. All right, well, let's transition into the head-to-head. We've got 4 spots here we're looking at. As noted, Action took me 3-1 last week, so he jumps ahead. He's now leading 37-36-3. I'm glad I could still stick with this guy. He's pretty smart.
It's a close game.
The first one we'll go over is the Chargers at New England. The Chargers at this point are 4-point underdogs at New England. I know you love the Chargers. You got them in your Super Bowl, so what do you say? You like them in this spot too?
I think you can convince me. Yeah, I'm going to take the Chargers here. I liked them a lot better at +5, but I'm certainly happy to take them at 4 too. Talking about trends, Philip Rivers is 0-4 in Foxborough mm-hmm. and 1-3 against the spread in his career. And, you know, I think that that's part of my handicap here. Philip Rivers was there in 2003. And he had the torn ACL, with Danian Tomlinson, and he played through it. And he has been waiting for this moment since that day. Mm-hmm. And I think that he's going to rise up, and this Chargers team will be able to move the ball against the aging Patriots defense. And talk about aging. I mean, Tom Brady looks like that he can barely throw the ball down the field. And Rob Gronkowski is like the bionic man walking around out there, can hardly move. Did you see the video on Twitter of Tom Brady taking Gronkowski to school one-on-one in the end zone?
No.
Oh, it was amazing. He went up and batted the ball away, and then he caught a touchdown against them. They went head-to-head. It was phenomenal. Well, anyhow.
That's not a good sign for Gronk.
No, not at all. And, you know, to be honest, they're really going to miss Josh Gordon in this game. Mm-hmm. I think that is really the one weapon that could unlock this Chargers defense. And without him, they're going to try and stick to that short passing attack where the Chargers really excel. They've got the pass rushers to get after Tom Brady. And I think that New England is going to look to establish the run game with Sony Michel and Burkhead, which is going to play right into the Chargers' hands. They can basically use the same handicap that they did last weekend against Lamar Jackson. Granted, Tom Brady is not Lamar Jackson. He could probably throw it a little bit too, but he's not going to throw the ball down the field.
Right.
So Derwin James and that secondary of the LA Chargers are going to be sitting there waiting to hit those short routes. And I think that they're going to cover. And I also think that they're going to win this game too. I'm betting them on the money line too.
He's going for that first time, 5 and 6 seeds in the AFC championship game. I hear what you're saying. I just can't see it, man. New England is, they've got an extra week to prepare for this team.
Mm-hmm.
This is Bill Belichick.
He's
seen Rivers many times. He's frustrated Rivers. The defense is pretty good for the Chargers, but I got to be honest with you. I think the Patriots might actually run the ball on the Chargers. Last week, it was easy to stop the running game with Lamar Jackson because you weren't afraid of the pass.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, of course, they're going to try to spread out the Chargers a little bit, maybe throw the ball around. But Sony Michel's a hell of a running back, and James White's not a slouch either. I think they're going to try to run against this team a little bit more, control clock to make Rivers try to come back late. And I got to be honest with you, the Patriots played much better defense down the stretch. Yes, they were playing chumps. But at the same time, they always do this. They're only allowing like 20.3 points per game for over the season. It's going to be a chess match. And I think ultimately, if it comes down to it, you know, Anthony Lynn versus Bill Belichick, I'll take Belichick every time. And 4 points, that's enough for me. If it was 6 or 7, I probably would go with the Chargers.
Yeah, I understand that. Another thing that we should point out in this mm-hmm. game is the weather report.
Okay.
If you saw early weather for Sunday, mm-hmm. it looks like 3 to 5 inches of snow expected, 30 degrees and 9 mile per hour winds.
Yes.
The game total opened up at 48 and it's already been bet down to 46.
Yeah.
I do like the under a little bit, but I would be a little bit careful if it gets too low. I also think the under in the first half is a good bet. I took it at 22.5, and I still think there's some value there all the way down to 21.
Okay. I think that crappy weather helps the Patriots side too, just the way
absolutely,
I look at it.
Absolutely, without a doubt.
All right. The other game that we were looking at is Indianapolis against the Chiefs. We've talked about Indianapolis on the side for sure. The total is 57, though, and we're looking at the total in the head-to-head. So what say you on that one, Action?
I already talked about it earlier. I jumped on the over at opening, mm-hmm. and I still like it here at this number of 57. I think that Indianapolis is going to score at will against this Kansas City defense, and I think that Kansas City will get their points too. I'm looking at a 31-28 final, Indianapolis, which takes this over the total.
That's 59 for everybody at home. I hear what you're saying. I actually think that Indy is going to try to slow the game down a little bit. They might get on top early like they did last week and run the ball and just run it into the ground. So 57 is a big total for me. It's not a Super Bowl. It's not a fast track. It'll be in Kansas City. I don't think this is going to go over. I know that these offenses are really good, and obviously the Chiefs have that high-powered offense. But to me, it's a playoff game. I can see this game being in the 20s and upper 20s, but not getting over that 57.
You do make a good point about the Indy run game. That is something that scares me a little bit in terms of what I know that their game plan is going to be too.
Mm-hmm.
But I still would love to go head-to-head with you on this one. Weather report looks like it's going to be 38 degrees and 4 mile per hour winds.
So pretty nice conditions.
Nothing too crazy.
All right. Well, let's look at college basketball for other two games. The first game is, you know, one of your darlings, obviously Duke, and I picked him obviously to win the championship, but I see Duke going to Florida State. Florida State is going to be a home dog, 9 points. Florida State has a really athletic team. They're not maybe as good as Duke at shooting the ball, you know, hitting a three ball, but I mean, Leonard Hamilton's going to have this team pumped up. I mean, it's going to be an underdog spot, 9 points at home, getting disrespected. I just think that's too many points for Duke. it'll be testing your new metric about the 8 to 9 point, 10 point favorites.
Valid.
But they are not at home. So I really like Florida State in this game with those points.
Yeah, I mean, you can't go wrong taking that home dog. Obviously, Florida State is a pretty good team, ranked in the top 25. They have a very stellar defense as well, 16th ranked and adjusted D. But this Duke team is on another level. I've got them as rated 13 points better on a neutral court.
Okay.
They have the number 2 ranked defense and the number 2 ranked offense. Yeah, and Zion Williamson is just kicking ass and taking names.
He's a beast.
They went into Clemson the other night and romped. Granted, that was a big game for Zion going back to his hometown. But I think that this Duke is just going to rip through the ACC, and I like them to cover this 9 points on Saturday.
Okay. I'm still waiting for when they play the Cavaliers. That's going to be a hell of a game, too.
Phenomenal. So. That's going to be must-watch TV.
All right, the last game is one of my darlings. I'll admit bias already. The San Francisco Dons are hosting the Mighty Zags at home in the West Coast Conference. Dons are playing at home, and again, the home dog, 7 points at home, at least on our metric. So I'm definitely going to take the Dons. This is a very good basketball team. I want this team to be the second team out of WCC to make the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, I don't know when the last time they've been to the tournament, maybe when Bill Russell was there. So the Zags are great. I love them long term, but I think going to San Francisco, that little gym's going to be rocking, and they're going to put up a huge fight against the Zags and at least stay within that 7 points.
Yeah, I can't wait to watch this game, too. Simply just taking the better team here in this game. Similarly, I have them as 11 points better. And granted, they're on the road again. I do see your angle with the home underdog there. And San Francisco has been pretty good this year. 34th ranked defense.
Mm-hmm.
But that Gonzaga offense is number one. 123 points per 100 possessions. And I think they might be able to squeeze this one out. And that 7 points is kind of a key number in college basketball with the free throws at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hopeful that Gonzaga can pull this one out by 7 or more.
All right. You're doubting my Dons. We'll see. All right.
Well, doubting my Dons. I like that.
We would talk to Don Corleone over there. All right. Well, that wraps up this episode of the Side Action Podcast, episode 20. We made it 20. We've hit over 1,000 downloads for the whole series.
Wow, 1,000.
Can't believe it. We've made something here. So please keep following us. Spread the word. Like us. Obviously, tell your friends and family. We're still trying to work on those angles with some for live events. I'm sure we'll get one going soon as I start networking there. But follow us at Side Action Pod on Twitter. Follow me personally at Wegspool on Twitter and Instagram.
And you can follow me on Twitter at 31SRoberts. We really appreciate all you guys listening to us and telling your friends and family about it. You know, I think Wegs and I have both been in a couple of pools where we've taken some money down. So hopefully you opponents out there are listening in and telling your friends about it. Maybe you can do some research and try and catch us next year.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we still got lots of college basketball and plenty of pro football to go. So there's plenty of more opportunities to make some cash.
Absolutely. College basketball season is one of my favorites.
All right. Well, all right, until next week.
Peace.
That's a wrap for this episode of the Side Action Podcast. We appreciate all of your listens, and thank you for joining us. We'll see you all again next week on Thursday for some more hot picks and side action. Side Action Podcast, its owners and associates take no responsibility for the opinions or statements made by the show hosts or their guests. Statements or show topics are not necessarily the beliefs of this podcast, and opinions between talk show hosts may conflict. Individuals following the advice given on the podcast accept their own risk of losses from wagers made, as the Side Action Podcast, its owners, hosts, associates, or guests will not guarantee any advice given. The opinions and advice given on the Side Action Podcast is for entertainment purposes only. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Intro and outro and transition music credits. Song titles, Jerry 5 and District 4 by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.org. Licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 3.0. creativecommons.org/licenses/by
3.0.